You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Does it bother you that I'm not completely human?
You are the most human person I have ever met.
Didn't I tell you to be home before dark?
I just lost track of time.
Alita,
you have to be responsible. You are someone very special.
Hey, kid.
Not just a teenage girl.
Hey, what's your problem?
You can't remember.
What do you mean?
Doc found you in the scrapyard. So you must be from up there.
And I'm just an insignificant girl.
That's what they want you to think.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Patrick Campbell.
Hello, everyone. It is nice to be back. Thank you for having me, Kale.
It's nice having you. So today, Patrick, what are we talking about?
We are talking about one of the most surprising movies of the year so far. And I know the year is early, but it's still nice to have a nice surprise like this. Is Alita, Battle Angel, directed by Robert Rodriguez and written and produced by none other than the man himself, James Cameron.
James Cameron. Is that an indie filmmaker? Did he do like a movie called The Terminator, Piranha 2?
This little movie called Titanic at one point. I guess that was kind of popular. Avatar might have been too. I'm not really sure about that. But I don't know. This guy's got some street cred from what I understand.
All right, cool. Okay, we'll go with that. But so, yeah. So, yeah, we are here to talk about Alita Battle Angel, the long-awaited project that's been in development since, I think...
Since I was born, it feels like.
Yeah. Before I was even conceived. So, finally, that project comes out. Robert Rodriguez directed it. It's been pushed back three times in its release date. Supposed to come out in July, but now it's coming out in February.
It's probably better that it missed the summer date, to be honest.
Oh, I completely agree. It's been a long awaited. I mean, not to get into too much of it, but James Cameron was supposed to write and direct this movie like a decade ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's been attached to this for a very long time. He flew to Japan to get the rights from the creator himself when he wanted to, after he had read it, because he really wanted the property. And for so long, like I know I jokingly said it feels like this has been in development since I was born, but from the time that the internet began to be like a place where film lovers and stuff were really coming together, Alita was a project that was always talked about. I've been following this project with which seems like forever. So always waiting for it to exist and waiting for it to come to life has been very interesting. And, you know, once Cameron did Avatar and then he was like, I'm legitimately not doing any other movies with my career. I only want to focus on doing the Avatar movies. I thought Alita was done for. I thought he was never going to make it. And then, you know, so many years down the line, we finally get Robert Rodriguez coming on to direct it. And I thought that was a very interesting choice. I mean, especially considering at the time Rodriguez was coming off of Sin City 2, and Sin City 2 really didn't do all that well and wasn't that well received. And I mean, it's been 5 years from Sin City to now. And arguably, I think Rodriguez has delivered one of the best films of his career under a very good script from James Cameron, who really helped bring this movie to life, because without Avatar, this movie wouldn't exist. And that really comes down to Weta and the motion capture technology that they are still so incredible at doing. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Planet of the Apes, it doesn't matter if it's Avatar, like these guys do motion capture and they do it so exquisitely well. And it's so cool and so amazing to look at. And Alita is one of the greatest motion capture characters of all time, with a very soulful performance from Rosa Salazar.
Rosa, yeah.
And this movie, for me at least, one of just the most immersive experiences I feel like I've had in a while. I love the world. I love almost all the characters. I really like what it was doing. It's not trying to change the wheel or, like, you know, change the world. But at the same time, this feels like the most immersive world I've been in a long time. And I just really enjoyed it. I've seen it twice already. And each time I found myself more and more drawn to the characters and more drawn to the world and Alita's story and the plight that they're all in. And in a lot of ways, I see the world that they live in much as what our world would be if the events of the fall had happened. So, like, if the fall happened now, I could see our world becoming that world. And it's just so interesting to watch. And I just adore this movie.
All right. So I really like the movie. I think it's really good. I think it's fascinating to watch. And I think it's a really good comeback for Robert Rodriguez because, as you did mention, his last movie was Sin City 2, A Dame to Kill For, a movie that I really did not like at all. I think this is a welcoming comeback because if you notice about Robert Rodriguez's career, you know, prior to Alita Battle Angel, he was pretty much sticking to making schlocky movies or homages to schlocky movies like Machete and, you know, so I think him kind of allowing other like creatives, like, you know, hiring a new DP and hiring a production designer, hiring, a composer. I think him kind of spreading the roles around, I think allowed him to, you know, focus more on the vision. And there are parts of Alita that feel messy. Like, this definitely feels like a James Cameron movie that was originally 3 hours long, cut down to 2 hours. But despite that, I really like the movie. I found the world very fascinating, and I cannot wait to see more of the movie, more of this universe, if it does happen. I know it opened very softly, but, you know, hopefully I hope it's a word of mouth hit.
Well, and that's what's so interesting is this movie was predicted to be opening at like $12 million its opening weekend. That was the forecast originally. It ended up opening to like 41. That's three times the amount that they thought it was going to open at, which is a very big deal. The problem is the movie cost $200 million to make. So right now the trouble will be them trying to recoup that budget and turn a profit. It'll be very interesting to see the legs because it got an A- cinema score, which is not bad. Word of mouth is actually very positive for the most part, which is good for the movie. So maybe it'll have a leggy run. There's not a lot of competition right now. Not until next month. It's really going to be dependent on the overseas box office, I feel like, though. I mean, that right now is what we have to look at, because once it opens in China and Japan, those could be the very real determining factors of what happens next. But I mean, I'm with you in a lot of ways that I know that the movie definitely has problems. It's a little bit messy. I don't like all the characters. However, in spite of those problems, I really found myself drawn to the film because, again, the world is just so fun and so fascinating and so kind of cool. And it's hard not to just embrace it, you know?
Right.
Even with less than stellar characters at times, this world is awesome. And it helps that, again, Alita herself, Rosa Salazar, she's so good. And it makes this movie.
Right. And for me, what I love most about the movie is it is essentially an allegory of a girl growing up or coming into her adolescence. Because at the start of the movie, she's very childlike. She's very wide-eyed. No pun intended.
Yeah, she's got very, very... Yeah, no pun fully intended. But she, I mean, she's very much got this kind of awestruck look to the world. Some of my favorite scenes are the scenes at the beginning when she's just realizing the world.
And then, you know, as she, you know, comes of age, she changes her body and molds, you know, herself into a warrior. And then basically at the end of the movie, she becomes a person for the people. She becomes...
Yeah, and she's there for them. She's their savior in a way.
Yes, but she is essentially their Christ figure in a cyborg body.
But not only that, the most interesting thing, and I think it's a thing that's very evident, is that she also realizes by the time the movie is over that she's there for them, but she's also like a lone Ronin in the world, and that the world is always going to be harsh and the world is always going to break her heart. And maybe she isn't always going to be in this journey with people. Like, people will be there, but this is her own lone journey to take. And I think that that's a very important, like, story beat for her. It makes her a very powerful character to have this realization that she is the lone Ronin of the world, you know, the lone gun, if you will. And she is there to save people and protect people, but it's on her own. She doesn't get the help that some other people might. And that makes her a very strong character.
Yeah, and I think for her, that's where the female empowerment comes from, is you watch her journey, you see her be not necessarily beaten, but you see her lose a lot. And that, you know, and she has to learn from those losses. And she has to kind of learn to earn her, you know, she has to kind of earn her empowerment through the whole journey. That's kind of what I liked about Alita. And it's kind of a noticeable trait in a lot of James Cameron's scripts, is that the female heroine, or really the hero of the story, kind of has to, you know, he has to go on a journey. He or she has to go on a journey of discovery for each of them, because that journey of discovery has, you know, trial and error and pitfalls and successes. I mean, that's why, like, Avatar is so... That's why, like, something like Avatar, like, it works so well, because you see Sully learning how to master every, you know, craft of the, you know, Na'vi, you know, of the Na'vi culture. Mm-hmm. Or for, you know, Terminator 2, you see the Terminator learn over time to not be as, you know, not be, you know, a violent, you know, killing machine.
And you know what I really like in this movie too, is that it's very typical of the hero not to want to embrace what they really are. But in this movie, Alita actually, when she finds her new cyborg body, she wants to embrace what she is. She wants to know where she came from. And once she knows and starts to see it, she wants to find that part of her. And I like that a lot, because, again, I'm so used to the heroes trying to walk away from what they are, and she doesn't do that. She walks straight to it and wants to be that person again. And I really like that.
So essentially what we're getting is we really love the character of Alita.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and but the character that's been getting a little controversy, and I think it's time to bring it up, is the character of Hugo.
Yeah, Hugo as a character is maybe not the strongest. It doesn't help that I don't necessarily really like the actor. I just think he's kind of boring in the role. However, I think that Hugo in the end is very important to Alita's story in a way that I don't think people are seeing, and it kind of plays into what I was talking about the idea of the world kind of breaking her, and the world showing her that she's kind of this lone Ronin and everything. We have to remember, when she first sees him, she's still figuring out the world. She's very awestruck at things. And Hugo was there in a moment of desperation right at the beginning of the movie for her. So, of course, she finds an attack. And I think it's weird. I think that she's like, oh, she just falls for the first guy she meets and all this stuff. It was also because it was a moment of kind of dread for her, and a moment where she could have potentially died. And Hugo was there when it happened, and he was kind of there to, you know, for her to almost have a shoulder to cry on, almost, but not really cry, but he was there for moral support in a way. And in that way, of course she's going to find an attachment to him. The only other people she has is the dog that she saves and Christoph Waltz. She doesn't have anyone else. So of course she finds attachment to him. It's not that surprising to me. And yes, he's not that interesting, but to her, he is interesting. Because to her, the world is interesting. And I think that, at the end of the day, is what makes the character, even if I don't really necessarily love the character works in the confines of the movie in the end because of that.
Well, the character of Hugo works for the structure. It works for the world building of the world that we're in, but it also works for Alita's arc as a character, because she has to learn, because that's how the whole part of this first movie is, it's her learning what she's up against in this world. And also, Hugo serves the point of, you know, not everyone is a good person, and not everyone in this world is a good person. They're all scavengers, and they're all, a lot of them are probably thieves of trying to survive, or trying to get to, they're trying to get to above. So for this, it's her journey to realize what she's up against, but also for her, it's for her to realize it doesn't matter that, you know, who these people are, I'm still their protector. I'm still their savior. So to me, that's an even more powerful arc. And you're right. I think people are kind of misinterpreting a lot of it as the born sexy yesterday trope, which is fair. I mean, it's a fair assessment, which is kind of fair, but still, I think you have to look at what the movie is doing with that trope. And I think what the movie is doing with that trope is it's trying to say, you know, that your first relationship will work out, and B, you'll learn a lot from that first relationship, especially if we go with that whole allegory of this is this is an allegory of a girl growing up. So.
Yeah, and there was some weird pushback too that I saw online about Alita's figure once she gets her new body and she starts to see herself how she believes she is. Guys, if she sees herself that way and that's how she wants to envision herself, then more power to her. She can be a badass and look like that. I don't understand the pushback to this. I really don't. The internet gets so caught up on the stupidest things. This might be one of the stupidest, in my opinion.
And look, we get it. We are two males, but still,
yeah.
But still, she sees herself, you know, as a better person. She sees herself as beautiful.
Yeah, and she sees herself as strong. She sees herself as beautiful. I really don't maybe it is because I'm male, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that that's how she wants to see herself. I don't really understand that. I guess maybe I'm not in the right shoes to understand it, but to me, I thought that was a very kind of beautiful moment for her.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was empowering. I thought that it was great that she saw herself as strong and beautiful.
Yeah. And So in that case, do you want to actually get to the real problems of the movie?
Yeah, sure. You can go ahead and start, because I'm very curious to see where you're coming from.
Well, so here are my problems with it. It's really more to do with the first half, where it feels like a lot of stuff. Like, there's a whole bit in the bar, like in the towards the end of the first third of the movie, where she makes a point where she knows that Nova is, you know, trying to, you know, find, you know, her and the doctor and kill them. But we never seen a scene where that she has that realization. So it goes to a kind of a larger point, and this is kind of just me kind of saying this, the larger point is I feel like there's a lot missing in that first half that tries to explain more of what's going on, that develops the characters, develops, you know, more into Alita's mindset when she's still in that, you know, adolescent mindset, especially when, you know, she's going from childlike wonder to angsty teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels very much like we're missing a lot of that in the first half of the movie. The second half of the movie is where things start to stay like pretty consistently the same. But it feels like, again, it feels like a James Cameron movie that was originally like 3 hours long got cut an hour. Got like cut by an hour to, you know, speed up the film.
Yeah. I will say, I don't necessarily think maybe that I definitely see where you're coming from, but I will say that when she's first kind of walking around the world and people are talking about, you know, the problems in the world, I can see where she might think that there's a larger force kind of in play, because you kind of hear everyone talking about, you know, this other world, and that there's someone, people up top are holding people down here, and you can't go up and you can't move. And there's an interesting idea about her as she is, knowing that there's someone out there. And then when she starts to have the visions of the fall and you realize that she was trying to kill him originally, I want, because that's still in the first act, isn't it? Because that's once Christoph Waltz goes out to hunt the big cyborg.
She has a vision of them fighting on the moon.
Yeah, and then she has the other vision later when she realizes that there is a certain person, because they even show him. So, I mean, she does learn it along the way. It's just, there's definitely stuff missing from the movie. It feels like this was probably closer to 2.5 hours at one point. But it's also not as detrimental to the movie as it could have been. I mean, it's not one of those times where there's enough missing that the movie doesn't work. I will say that I wish that there was more to the world building things that I would have liked to see. And I don't, get me wrong, the motorball stuff is cool, but maybe a little less motorball, more world building, you know, more time with some of the other characters and getting to know them a little more. Like, I don't understand the point of Hugo's friend for the most part, the kid from Bumblebee. He's just there to not like Alita and never does anything. And then
he never
doesn't work. Yeah, he's never more than angsty friend who hates robots.
Yeah, and, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, even the rollerball scenes feel like they're kind of cut down to the bare minimum, because Jai Courtney is in this movie for like a minute and then he walks away.
I'm sorry, what?
Jai Courtney.
I didn't see him.
Jai Courtney in the movie.
No. There's no Jai Courtney here.
It's not possible
for me to like a movie that Jai Courtney is in.
Are you blinded by the fact that Jai Courtney was in a movie?
I can neither confirm nor deny the fact that Jai Courtney might have been in this movie, but I didn't see Jai Courtney in this movie because I like this movie, so, you know.
Okay.
Jai Courtney and I, we don't get along. We beef a little bit.
Well, he, okay, so there's a JC cameo. JC kind of pops into the scene, pops into the movie for like a second, and then he walks out, and you're like, well, wait a minute. Why was he in this movie? And then he just walks out. Like,
the movie is the better for it.
I'm sure it is, but you don't just hire, like, I get, like, why people, like, I get it, Jai Courtney's not, like, a big star anymore, but you don't just hire Jai Courtney for, like, a minute cameo, and then just be like, yep, he's out of the movie.
Well, again, the movie is all the better for it.
I'm sure it is.
Jai Courtney.
I'm sure it is.
Look, at the end of the day, I like everything with the motorball sequences. I just wish that, like I said, I just kind of wish that we'd get to spend more time here. And I wonder if it's because they were afraid if the movie was too long that people wouldn't go to see it. But we were actually having this conversation before the podcast started. I think Avengers Endgame is going to play a big part in finally kind of putting that to rest. Because I don't think it matters how long a movie necessarily is. As long as the movie is good, people will respond to it. I've never not gone to a movie because it's too long. I've only not gone to a movie because I either, one, I just don't have the time, or two, I'm just not interested. It's never about how long the movie itself is.
Well, here's the... Well, and to bring up that point again, the top-grossing movies ever are all over 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are even close to 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the 2.5 hour movies have proven themselves. And
I like to believe so.
Yeah, I don't know why we keep thinking if we just cut it down to 2 hours, you know, we're gonna make bank on those popcorn sales or whatever. The reason is, you know, this year for cutting a movie down to 2 hours.
We should always remember that people like TV shows and stuff because they like the characters and they like the world that they're in. So it should be indicative that if that's the case, we should spend more time with characters and worlds and movies that we enjoy. We shouldn't be trying to reach a certain runtime, either long or short. We should tell the story that needs to be told in the allotted time that we feel it needs to be told in. And I think Alita could have used an extra 10 or 15 minutes.
Honestly, I could have watched this for another hour.
Well, I could have too, but I mean, for what we're talking about, the bare minimum would have been like 10 to 15 minutes. Just to flesh out some more of the characters and some more of the world. I could have watched this movie for 3 hours and I would have been fine. But if we need even just a little bit more, I would have liked it a little bit more.
Because even the ending for me has a problem in that, not to spoil everything, not to spoil it yet, but the problem with the ending for me is that it cuts to, and we don't see any more of her progression in the rollerball ring.
Yeah, it jumps after a certain ahead. Point. It jumps ahead, and I wasn't super a fan of that because I would have liked to watch her grow and lead.
Yeah, let's spend a whole movie where she, you know, becomes this motorball champion. Rollerball.
Yeah, and I get it because they want to end on an emotionally powerful note. And the emotionally powerful note is that she watches something drastic happen to Hugo and it affects her greatly. And so in the ensuing months, she goes to the Motorball League specifically so that she can go up top to this other city, because then she can confront the person that has held her back and that, like, she was programmed to kill. I get it. I really do. But I think that we are missing something in just the jump ahead in time. But I understand why they did it.
It feels like, I don't know if you remember this, but it feels like The Amazing Spider-Man 2, where after Gwen's death, which is like the climax of the movie, it feels like, you know, a group of writers being like, well, we can't end it like horribly depressing. We have to end it on a high note.
And yeah, except Amazing Spider-Man 2 kind of, it goes into jokes, which is tonally awkward. Alita doesn't do that. Alita still, like, plays on what happened. And it's emotionally, because it picks up with her still being visibly upset. And you can see that what happened has pushed her to get to this point. Because we know earlier in the movie that she said she was going to do this motorball stuff specifically for Hugo.
Right.
And to get them out of the city. I get all that. But it also ends in a way that she is looking, like, she is looking forward to going up because she wants to have that confrontation. And it's very visibly, like, she is angry. It feels tonally in place still, whereas Amazing Spider-Man 2 feels like a tonally different movie. And that's the biggest problem with that ending.
Right, but, I mean, but you see what I'm getting at is that it feels like we can't end on a low note, so we have to end on a high note.
Yeah, but I also don't necessarily think with Alita that it's necessarily a low note, or a high note, I mean. Because, yeah, she became the rollerball champion, but or the motorball champion, but what did it cost? And, you know, what has all this been for? Like, it's not necessarily a high note for her. So I think it's just kind of dependent on how you look at the situation and for her specifically.
Okay. So with that going forward, is there anything spoilery you wanted to talk about? Or have we covered enough of it to where we can move on?
I think we can move on. There's one thing I do want to say, too. Christoph Waltz is actually used for the first time in a long time, I feel like, correctly. And I really, really like him in the movie. And that was kind of nice, because I haven't seen a director use him quite correctly since Tarantino.
Well, do you mind elaborating on that more? Because I think you brought that up on your show. But do you mind elaborating on that more?
It's just something about Waltz himself. I think that after Inglourious Basterds and Django, he was getting put into roles where people wanted him to be what Tarantino was doing. But the problem was is that these filmmakers weren't finding the way to use him. They're giving him these characters that were a little bit more, they're like, oh, Waltz could just be Waltz in it. But they weren't giving him, like, the emotion to play these characters. They weren't giving him the right dialogue to be these characters. I mean, he's a very well-spoken individual. He's a very charismatic actor. And I know that there's some people who don't think he's used very well by Tim Burton in Big Eyes. I actually like him in Big Eyes, but it's not his best performance. But in this, Robert Rodriguez gave him this kind of role that was very human and very soulful, and he really let Waltz be Waltz. And even though it's not like the quippy Tarantino dialogue that we're used to him delivering, it was a character that actually fit him, and it just felt right. And that's kind of the best way I can explain it, because when you watch a movie like Water for Elephants, that character was not right for him. They wanted it to be right for him, but it wasn't right for him. This one, it just kind of fits him like a glove. And it feels like a very real type of character for him. And I like that.
Yeah. Okay. I completely get it. I mean, well, but you brought, but bringing back, you know, to Water for Elephants, I mean, that character is very much, like, he doesn't have as much dimension as he should.
Right. And I think at least in Alita, he has that dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very real character, because when you understand where he's coming from and what happened to him in the past and why he's held on to this body that he gave Alita and why finding Alita was such a big deal to begin with, it gives him a lot to do, and I really like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, and he's really good as this father figure for Alita.
Mm-hmm.
It's
just a character that works for him.
Yeah. So, yeah. I really like the movie. I don't have much more to say. Is there anything else you want to say?
I really want to encourage people to go see the movie. I know that we all kind of gave it a hard time online. We were all kind of not sure what it would be. But at the end of the day, it ended up being a really great science fiction adventure film. I think it's one with some really great leads. I think that it's a movie that a lot of the audiences connect to more than you might think. And if anything, go see it for the incredible CGI work and Rosa Salazar's really, really great performance. She's a star in the making. And this movie doesn't work without it, her making it work. And that's incredible to me.
Yeah, I completely agree. She is. I mean, she was huge on the Maze Runner series. Like, she really was a great, she gave a really great performance on the, in those movies. But yeah, she really shines here. And I think, you know, that's, to me, I think the best contribution or and biggest contribution that Robert Rodriguez brings. Because as someone who's looking at Alita, it still feels like a James Cameron movie. Like, there's a lot of violence. There's a lot of, you know, like, it has a very James Cameron structure. But in the end, I feel like Robert Rodriguez could probably, was probably the only person that could conceivably hire Rosa Salazar and make that work. If that makes any sense.
No, it definitely does, and I completely agree with you.
So, regardless of what happens, I feel like you got to keep Rosa Salazar as this character for a long time.
Yeah, I really hope we get more movies. That's why I really encourage people, go see this movie, like, make up your own mind. I think you're going to be a lot more pleasantly surprised than you might have expected.
I know I was.
And I know I was too.
Yeah, because, well, and I think a lot of it was, I think we've been just kind of bashing James Cameron for so long. Because we're just kind of like, motherfucker, just get away from Avatar. Do something else.
Yeah, just because it does feel like he's wasting his potential just on Avatar, if I'm being honest. And that's not a dig at him so much as it's like, I like him as a filmmaker and I want to see him doing more than just Avatar.
Yeah, and I feel like, I think he could do so much more. But, I mean, he's always been a technical pioneer, so he might as well end his career technically pioneering these four sequels.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, and good for him, man, I guess. Like, you want to make this series? Go for it. I know I've openly talked about it before. I just don't know how successful these movies are going to be in the end. I know it's like the don't doubt James Cameron thing, but I find it hard to believe that that movie is still the highest grossing movie of all time, and yet no one really talks about it.
It's amazing how little, like, it has contributed to the cultural zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
And it still is the highest grossing movie. I mean, we thought Star Wars would break it, but even then, Star Wars couldn't beat it.
Yeah, it's very weird, man. So, I hope for the best with when it comes to Avatar, but if anything, I've been proven that Cameron as a storyteller can still be strong if he's given the right material, and at least on a screenwriting level, Alita is a very large step forward in showing me that he can still do stuff outside of Avatar.
Yeah. So with that, where can the good people find you?
If you guys would like to listen to my podcast, The PJ Campbell Show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, and Podbean. You can also find my writing over at triviasd.com, where I do write about the Schmodown. I am also going to push the Schmodown. If you guys do not watch the Movie Trivia Schmodown, please head over to the Movie Trivia Schmodown YouTube page. You can subscribe to it there. We love movie trivia. We love wrestling. Why not put the two together? It is really, really fantastic. We would really love for you guys to tune in and watch. And you guys can find me on Twitter at PJ_Campbell or Facebook at Patrick Campbell _PJ.
All right. Well, and yes, please check out the PJ Campbell Show. It's really good. Patrick Campbell and Patrick Hogue work really hard over there.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I mean, they work really hard. Please go check them out. It's a great show. When's the next episode coming out?
It'll actually be out tomorrow, or depending on when this is out. It'll be out.
Yeah, it'll be out. This one will be out tomorrow.
Okay, so the new episode of the PJ Campbell Show will be out today then, while this show is out. So you'll be able to find, it'll be the 9th episode of the new podcast, which is actually really exciting. We're in the very last single digit episode of our new podcast, which is really exciting to us.
Hooray!
I know. I mean, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it is. Like, for us, especially me coming back to the podcasting world the way that I have over the last 2 months, it's been a really fun to kind of jump back into it the way that we are. And I'm really, really proud of the work that Hoag and Frank Janish and I are doing. We're actually going to have Brad Gilmore on this week, who is the host of the Schmodown Rundown with Frank Janish. So he will be stopping by. Last week, we didn't have it was just the three of us. The week before, if you go back, if you're a fan of The Real Rejects, we had Greg Alba on that episode. And that actually may be my favorite episode to date. I loved the conversation that we had with Greg. I thought it was really insightful and a lot of fun. So really, please go and check that out. It was a ton of fun for us. So definitely look into it. We just have a blast. It's basically, if you, from what everyone who talks to us who really enjoys it, sees it as peering in on a group of friends who are having a conversation over beers at a bar. And we try really hard to talk about all the stuff going on in pop culture through the lens of just kind of stripping it down to what we all see it as. There's not a lot of we aren't overzealous about anything. We don't push a narrative. We just talk about things the way they are. It's fun. It's fact-based in that way that we're just having a conversation about these things. And I think that it's important to see all sides of an argument or all sides of the situations as things are in Hollywood. And that's really what our aim has been.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Patrick, for coming on the show. And yeah,
thank you for having me.
And again, thanks ever. Please go check out the PJ Campbell Show. For my side of things, you can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. And then you can also follow the show at The Youth Critic. And then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast for the latest updates and all that jazz on the channel at KHZ Network. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you next week with either we'll either talk about Happy Death Day 2 or How to Train Your Dragon 3. Thanks, everyone.
I'm not your daughter. I don't know what I am.
I do. You're the most advanced weapon ever.
But that's just a shell. It's not bad or good. That part's up to you.
I do not stand by in the presence of evil.
She's threatening the natural order of things.
Tonight is not a game. It is a hunt. I need you to destroy a girl called Alita.
You made the biggest mistake of your life.
And what's that?
Underestimating who I am.